Paul Hirsch talks about his career, my next guest, in film editing, as told in a long time ago in a cutting room far, far away. It's a behind-the-scenes look at some of the most influential films of the past 50 years. A film editor who worked on more than 40 features, including a little thing called Star Wars, as well as The Empire Strikes Back, Brian De Palma's Carrie, and Mission Impossible, but to name just a few. Delighted to be joining me live on the show, Paul Hirsch himself. Paul, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Whereabouts do we find you today? Are you over in, I would imagine you'd be on the West Coast somewhere.
I'm in Los Angeles in Pacific Palisades, about a mile from the Pacific Ocean.
Great to have you with us. For those who don't know, what exactly does a film editor do? What are the arts behind film editing?
Film editing is a bit of a misnomer because, like smartphones, a smartphone could just as well be called a smart camera that could make phone calls, or a computer in your pocket. Editing is only one aspect of the job, most of the time, in the sense of paring down is what we think of as what editing is. But in fact, a lot of our time is spent building up as the picture is being shot. We're getting film every day, and we're searching through this stuff that comes to us and looking for the best pieces with which to build the film that we intend to release. So you spend a lot of time building, and then once you have it all up on its feet, you look at the whole thing, and then you start the editing process at that point.
And it is a business that has changed, or an industry or an art that has changed beyond recognition in the past, the past 20 years since everything went digital. I mean, when you started, obviously, the title of the books, Once Upon a Time on a Cutting Floor, long, far, far away. I mean, at that point, you really were slicing and splicing, presumably, reels of film.
Yeah, but fortunately for me, editing is not a technical job, because if it were, I'd be in big trouble. But it's actually a kind of a mental discipline, and the tools that are employed to achieve it are sort of beside the point. It's as if, would Shakespeare have written greater plays if he had a word processor? I don't think so. It's not about the tools. Writing is not about the pen, and editing is not about the splicer or the computer that you're working on. Excuse me.
So how did you get in, if you like? What was your entry into the business? Because you won an Academy Award at an incredibly young age before you almost decided you wanted to do this.
Well, it wasn't quite that early, but it did come very early in my career. I mean, it came before I started to develop a hunger for one. I was just looking to get another job, and then I got on Star Wars and everything changed. But I originally had planned to go into architecture, and I found myself in a summer school program in Paris, and wandering around the Left Bank with a lot of free time in my hands, I found theaters there showing old Hollywood films, and they would have signs on the marquee saying Howard Hawks Film Festival. I thought, who's Howard Hawks? And they would say Raoul Walsh Film Festival. I thought, who's Raoul Walsh? And I realized that the French regarded the Hollywood studio directors as artists. And I then went to an Orson Welles film festival. And in 1 week, I saw Citizen Kane, The Magnificent Ambersons, A Touch of Evil, and The Lady from Shanghai. And those films made a powerful impression on me. I didn't realize how powerful, but I went back to New York to start architecture school in the fall and realized it was not a good fit. And I knew I wanted to do something, creative or in the arts in some way. And I visited an editing room at that time, and I became fascinated with the tools. It's funny, I was just talking about the tools don't matter, but it's actually the tools that got me excited about it in the first place. But, I didn't know I would be good at it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if I'd be interested in it or not, but I was drawn to it for some reason. And when I started doing it, I realized I did enjoy it and I did have a knack for it.
And you started working. Was one of the first things one of you done was Brian De Palma, was Carrie, which is, you know, classic horror film, and you know a huge impact on that whole sort of 70s horror genre, introducing Stephen King to us as well.
Yeah, it was Stephen King's first novel, and it was also, of course, the first of his books to be brought to the screen. It was actually my fifth film with Brian De Palma. The earlier ones have, you know, some of them have a cult following, but they're not as well known or didn't have as much of an impact on the culture as Carrie did. I mean, Carrie drenched in blood is sort of an iconic image that survives to this day.
When you see something like that as you're editing and you get an image like Carrie drenched in blood, which, you know, everybody listening will remember that, do you think that is it like that's the hook? I mean, this, you can tell that that's going to be something quite special.
No, I have very weak powers of divination. I thought, you know, that around the time Carrie was conceived as a project, it was coming off The Exorcist, and I thought it was sort of a copycat, you know, possessed girl with special powers, and, you know, and I thought, why are we doing this sort of derivative thing? But it turned out to be much, much more than what I had expected.
Is it an urban myth that, you know, that Carrie and Star Wars were kind of running not parallel to each other, but very quickly afterwards, and it was a beard thing that got you into meeting George Lucas?
Well, in 1971, George was on the Warner Brothers lot shooting THX, and Brian was there shooting a picture called Get to Know Your Rabbit. And they were the only directors on the lot who had beards. So they became friends. And it was through Brian, with whom I had done five pictures, that I met George. And Carrie and Star Wars were shot around the same time.
But the thing with, I mean, if you look at THX, that's a very bleak, very bleak picture. It's a very bleak film about, you know, the future. Star Wars was, if you like, took a lot from Westerns, took a lot from Saturday morning picture shows. And there were bits and pieces that you did, for example, between the scenes, the slide, for example.
Wipes, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that and how you, because nobody had made a film. Science fiction before then had been, if you like, bleak, 2001, you know, we hadn't had Alien yet, obviously, but it wasn't seen as, if you like, the fantasy that it would become.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, one of the pictures preceding Star Wars was called Logan's Run. And in previous science fiction films, everything was sleek and clean and modern. And George's approach to shooting Star Wars was to make everything look used and dirty and busted. And you know, 3PO has one silver leg because he's made up of spare parts. And there are oil stains on the walls and things of that sort. He wanted the world to be very used looking and lived in. And, you know, and his inspirations were many. He drew from Westerns, as you say, but there's also the, you know, the Errol Flynn rescuing the maiden in the castle aspect to it. And there are the World War II air battle influences, of course, and Westerns, the Western bar, and, you know, all sorts of influences. The helmet that Vader is wearing looks a lot like a Japanese warrior helmet. And I find that when you watch Star Wars, you're not watching a movie, you're watching the movies. It's like you're seeing George's love for all kinds of movies, all diced and made into a new salad, you know, sort of old ingredients, sort of chopped up and made into something fresh and new.
But of course, you didn't see the movie whilst you were editing it. You were just given various scenes, presumably, to edit. But George wouldn't let you actually see the movie in its entirety.
Well, you know, I was hired because they got in trouble in terms of the schedule. The original cut was sort of going in the wrong direction, and the original editor was let go. And Richard Chu and Marshall Lucas were recutting the picture from top to bottom. But Marshall also had to put together the end battle. So they realized they needed an extra pair of hands, and they called me in. So the three of us worked together for 3 months, recutting and finishing off the end battle. And then at that point, I became the editor for the last 5 months on the film.
Did you have any idea the impact it would have? I mean, it was, I mean, I was a 9-year-old. It was a phenomenon. I mean, my playground, and I know that one of the scenes you worked in is that final, you know, Luke going down the tube in the Death Star. That was recreated on playgrounds the world over. We were all Luke Skywalker going down with our wingmen. I mean, it must have been, talk about being on the, in the eye of a perfect storm and a global phenomenon.
Well, no, I had no idea. You know, we were just working very hard to try to get the job done. It was like laying track in front of a locomotive. You know, we were just busy from morning till night, trying to do everything that had to be done. Star Wars was a film with a million details, each of which had to be carefully put into place. And no, there was, you know, I had no thought of it becoming a worldwide phenomenon. I later did a picture with Baz Luhrmann. And Baz said something to me. He said, you know, it's such a collaborative medium that what the best thing we can hope for is to work on a film that becomes a part of the culture. And, you know, fortunately for me, I've been lucky enough to have that happen to me a number of times.
You had that as well, didn't you, in The Empire Strikes Back? And wasn't there a great quote about nobody likes to see suffering on screen because there's, you know, there's Han dragging Luke through the ice planet of Hoth, and it was a long scene of him being basically, you know, saved in the bitter cold.
Yeah, it's actually Irvin Kershner, the director, said to me, he watched the scene and he said, physical difficulty is boring. I realized he was right, you know.
Yeah.
It only works if there's a clock running, you know. If somebody's trying to untie their hands, that can only play so long. But if they're trying to untie their hands and you cut to a train approaching, you know, that's a different story. Then you have some tension and some you can play that, you can milk that for a while.
Of course, there've been, you know, 40 films in here. I mean, including Ray, which is a brilliant film. I mean, from, you know, how do you, Is there a technique then, as we said, are you trying to build, you know, to get the narrative running in? Because you can change the whole, if you cut a scene wrong and put it in the wrong film, it could change the whole feeling of the film, surely.
Absolutely. Context is everything. You have to find these jewels and set them in the proper setting. You know, that's what we're looking for, is those moments. And then you have to figure out how to frame those moments to best effect. That's the art, isn't it?
So what was the, because you won a second Academy Award, I believe, for Ray.
I didn't win.
Oh, okay, sorry, my apologies. So the book, what spurred you on? Did you think that, you know, 50 years was a good marker to put down and you wanted to get it all down?
Well, actually, I started writing the book after 30 years of my career, and I had been telling these stories and to good effect. And I thought, you know, I should really write these stories down. And I started doing that. And then I chipped away at the book for years. I mean, I would put it aside for 2 or 3 years if I got busy in my career. But as I got older, the periods of unemployment became longer and the jobs became fewer. So I had more and more time to devote to the book. So I finally finished the book I finished the first draft of the book after 18 years. So the first, you know, 30, I hadn't taken notes, but I remembered it a lot. And at that point, I'd made an outline for myself of what I intended to write about. And then the next 18 or 20 years, I was taking notes as I kept having interesting experiences and meeting interesting people.
Is it difficult for you now to watch the work that you've done and maybe think you could have tightened up a little? Do you look at some of the early work and go, I was obviously learning then, or is it just great to look back and remember the memories?
I don't watch my old films. I mean, I try to watch new things I haven't seen before. I have had the experience lately. You know, we had a 40th anniversary screening of Phantom of the Paradise, and that was a lot of fun. I mean, the thing about seeing old movies that I've done is that when I finish a movie, I never want to see it again because I've seen it so many times. I'd rather put my eyes out than see it one more time. So, you know, at that point, you just can't enjoy it at all. But if 20 years go by, then you've forgotten enough so that you can watch it without too much, you know, torture. But I had the same experience with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, where it was a revival screening and it was a packed house, and that was fabulous. That was really a fun screening.
You've said that you don't want the book to be a how-to guide. So what do you hope that people will take from the memoirs?
I hope they'll want to buy it for all their friends.
Well, I'm sure they will after this interview. That's the best answer I've had. That is the best answer I've had all year. The book is called A Long Time Ago in a Cutting Room Far, Far Away. If people want to find you, Paul, are you online? Is there a website? Do you do the social media thing?
Well, I'm on Facebook. I don't have a page or anything, but I can be found there.
Super. The book is called, congratulations on the book. It's called A Long Time Ago in a Cutting Room Far, Far Away. I know you're busy. Paul Hirsch, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.